Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Some breaking news, actually. According to Ian Rappaport, the Chiefs are going to be interviewing Lewis Riddick for their GM opening. You might know Lewis Riddick from ESPN because he talks about football. Which makes a little bit of sense. He was the Eagles director of player personnel back for a few years under Andy Reid. So the connection there is obvious. If you want to be a cynic, or at least you're just like comfortable being at least a little bit of a cynic, the Chiefs have to fulfill the Rooney Rule while looking for GMs. And if you couldn't tell by Brett Veach's name, he does not fulfill the Rooney Rule. So I'm not in any way convinced that it's a done deal already. But that might have had something to do with it. But Andy Reid knows Lewis Riddick, and apparently Riddick was close to getting the 49ers job before John Lynch got it out of bleeping nowhere. On like a lifetime contract with full power over every element of the franchise. John Lynch ended up getting the Niners job, but according to Pro Football Talk, Riddick said that he was close to getting that 49ers job, and it looks like now he's getting another shot to make a case for running the personnel department for the Chiefs. Pro Football Talk also here says the team's co-directors of player personnel, Mike Borgonzi and Brett Veach, are expected to be candidates for a promotion. The team will be looking outside the organization as well. That's something we knew already, but Lewis Riddick is a new specific name that we had not heard yet. So that is slightly interesting. Although, this is just popping up because this is all just happening now, obviously. Arrowhead Pride just put out a story that says Lewis Riddick has some hashtag interesting tweets on the Chiefs, which this is actually, this is super interesting. I haven't read any of these yet. But if Lewis Riddick were to be Chiefs GM, he's been getting paid by ESPN for a while to be honest with his football opinions about everything across the NFL. Like Lewis Riddick said on about the Chiefs, quote, "The organization realizes that maybe Alex has crested as far as his career is concerned." That's obviously the Chiefs admitted that with the drafting of Patrick Mahomes. Lewis Riddick tweeted after the Chiefs-Steelers playoff game, said, "Steelers offensive line whipped the Chiefs DL as thoroughly slash completely as you can in a professional football game. The Steelers stopped themselves by throwing. Defending the run on first down between the tackles has been a problem for KC all year, not just now that DJ is hurt." So you read those tweets, and that's interesting. You kind of can go back to his backlog to see what he thinks about a few pieces of the Chiefs. The defensive line struggled last year in the playoff game. They were doing it without Jay Howard or Alan Bailey. Now they're doing it without Jay Howard anyway, but maybe Alan Bailey returns, and they added Tano Passanio, so maybe that doesn't come to fruition. But it sounds like if Lewis Riddick was going to actually set foot in the front office of the Kansas City Chiefs, he would want to make sure that they had some inside linebacker help around Derek Johnson and then a replacement for Derek Johnson coming around pretty soon. Derek Johnson's contract next year is slightly dumpable. You would have to eat a bunch of dead money. But, you know, maybe you read that tweet and think, oh, maybe Riddick thinks that DJ's about done. Maybe more so than your average fan or Andy Reid. So if that does come to any sort of fruition, that'll be very interesting to see how he would act in regard to things he's already said about the Chiefs, because that's kind of his job, is to say things about football teams. Like, if I was going to be able to make personal decisions for the Chiefs, I would be in huge trouble, because I think I've said everything in every direction at this point. If you missed it, by the way, we're talking about a new general manager because the Chiefs fired John Dorsey. It's just out of nowhere. And we now all live in Andy Reid's world. Like, I didn't want to do the exact same open for today's show that we did at Friday night for sports night. But I was just using Andy Reid saying "Time's yours" as punctuation for basically every sentence, and it was my favorite open door show that I've ever done. Because the time is strictly Andy Reid's now. Or the time is John Dorsey's, I guess, to go find another job because he's got a bunch of free time now. Maybe that's how Andy Reid delivered that message to John Dorsey. I know you got a lot of things, you know, outside of football in your life you want to do. That's not even true. Time's yours to go do all those things you want to have, all those hobbies you have. Time's yours to leave. So it is Andy Reid's world now. We're all living in it. We are all wasting oxygen by not being Andy Reid. We're wasting time that is not ours. And the Chiefs fired John Dorsey. The phrasing was about mutually parting ways, and that's just silly. That's to trap simple-minded fools like us. Because you hear the language of it all in any of the reports. This was not a parting of ways. But the logical next question is, well, what happened there? Why? Why any of this? How did this happen? They extend Andy Reid, and then 42 minutes later, they fire the GM. That's not an accident. What fell apart? What collapsed? Simply, why any of this? At this point, still, it's all theorizing. It's all speculation, but we can theorize together. And I feel like I know a whole lot more. I learned a whole lot on Friday night with Sportsnet, because we talked to Matt Verderam and we talked to Benjamin Albright. And both of those interviews are podcasted. You can go to 810WHB.com and go to podcasts and Sportsnet. They are both really good interviews. And I think later today, later this hour, we maybe will even play the interview with Benjamin was really interesting. Also pretty short. We might just play that again today. It's a little 10-minute just blast of knowledge. Because he was the first person to report that Andy Reid forced John Dorsey out. Which goes up against some of the things that Sam Mellinger and Trez Paleo speculated. A couple of guys that I also thoroughly trust. And I asked him about that. And he had interesting answers for everything. So we'll play the interview that I did with him back a little bit later on. But if we're doing this whole educated speculation thing, which is what so much of sports talk radio even is, especially in this case though, if we're going to do that speculation, educated speculation together, I think we can come up with 3, 4, 5 potential reasons that this relationship could have fallen apart. And then you can decide for yourself if you think it was justified or not. Or if you think the move made sense or not. But the first thing that I thought of whenever I saw this news, and by the way, not to be revisionist, whenever this came out, whenever Andy Reid's contract came out, I said, oh man, this is great. I hope this is followed by a John Dorsey announcement in about 45 minutes. I meant an announcement of a contract extension, not of a firing. But I also cannot be revisionist whenever I say one of the things that I've talked about on this show over the last couple of months ad nauseum is the Chiefs cap situation, especially compared to a team like the Broncos. The Chiefs have not managed the salary cap well at all under John Dorsey. The Raiders and the Broncos have about $100,000 in dead cap space, and the Raiders had to eat a lot of bad contract money in the past, and now they're walking up to the potential of having to do it again. We'll talk about Derek Carr later if we have time. But the Broncos are just managing their cap really well. That wizardry, the cap wizardry they do it by not having dead cap space. It's honestly that simple. And this year, the Chiefs have about $9.5 million in dead cap space. But there's a new number that I found out late last week, that was enlightening. According to SpotTrack, the Chiefs are about $13 million over the cap for the 2018 season. That's remarkable. They're $13 million over the cap for next season. And we're not even close talking about like a Marcus Peters contract extension or even filling out a full roster. Because there are guys whose contracts run out after this season. $13 million in dead caps. And $13 million over the cap in 2018. A season that's not even close to being here. So how do you get out from that? How do you get back under the cap? Well, there are a couple of easy cuts. They have to cut Tom Vahali. It'll save something like $7.5 million. And they have to cut Alex Smith. You cannot come back at me with, well, what if Pat Mahomes isn't ready? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because the Chiefs can't afford to pay Alex Smith next year. It's not in the books. To pay Alex Smith next year, you would have to get rid of even more quality players, quality pieces of both sides of this team. So they cut him, and they'll save a big chunk of money, and as soon as over the cap loads on our blazing Wi-Fi here, I'll tell you exact numbers. Now listen, I don't mean to lash out at the Wi-Fi. A good host would have had this tab pulled up already. But a good host I am not. Alex Smith is going to make $20 million in 2018. That's his scheduled cap number is $20.6 million. Right there, by the way, with Justin Houston. If they cut Alex Smith in 2018, it saves the Chiefs $17 million. Cost them $3.6 in dead cap money. You cut Alex Smith, you get back under the cap. You cut Tom Bahali, you have about $10 million in cap space to sign extensions and to sign new players and to fill out your roster and to just try to be not bad. Just to try to have good players on your roster. And you saw just about, 3 weeks ago what the Chiefs were willing to do for $10 million in cap space. It's what they got for Jeremy Maclin. About $10 million bucks in cap space. So what happens after they cut Maclin, Smith, and Tamba Hali? Maclin obviously this year, Smith and Tamba next year. What they're going to do to make up for being $13 million over the cap is they're going to pay, listen closely, they're going to pay Alex Smith, Jeremy Maclin, and Tamba Hali a total of $10 million in 2018 to not play for the Chiefs. $10 million. There will be 10, barring some sort of miraculous contract restructuring, which none of those guys should do. Maclin can't, obviously, now. Tamba should wait to get cut and then cash his $1.5 million check as it comes through because it's the contract that he signed. Alex Smith should cash his check for all that dead money because it's the contract he signed. And NFL teams know this, by the way. There's no surprise here. You sign guys to long-term deals or some of that money's on the back end, and you plan on eating it at the end if you are managing the cap in the way that John Dorsey does. So in 2018, the Chiefs are $13 million over the cap. Right now. As of right now. They're going to get under that cap by cutting Alex Smith and cutting Jeremy Maclin. I'm sorry, and cutting Tamba Hali. And they're going to pay those three guys $10 million to not play for the Chiefs. Unless they find a way to trade Alex Smith for something. And you find a team who's willing to take that contract, which I don't see happening.
I'm just going to say, would the cap management be the biggest reason for John Dorsey, in your opinion?
It's my biggest reason. Because it's something that didn't come up after he was fired. Now, the other thing, and this is the second biggest leg to stand on for me, is that the Chiefs lost badly gambling on Eric Berry and Justin Houston. Like a gamble that cost them tens of millions of dollars. because the Chiefs waited and waited and waited until both of them had career years. And then they got signed to massive contracts. And Jason Cole said that John Dorsey had told a source that he'd been butting heads with Clark Hunt for a while. And Benjamin Albright, who joined the show on Friday, said that that headbutting was because of the Eric Berry contract. Those deals, waiting a year to sign Eric Berry until after he had made a case for, like, certainly Defensive Player of the Year, maybe MVP. But he certainly had a case to make for Defensive Player of the Year. And Justin Houston did before his big contract. Waiting for career years before signing your stars is not good business. Because now the Chiefs are beholden to those two guys in a huge way for a while. Which might work out okay, but it hurts you now. Because instead of paying Justin Houston, I don't know, $12 million next season, they're going to be paying him $20 in 2018 as the contract actually gets a little bit better. This year, they're paying Justin Houston $22. Justin Houston has a $22 million cap hit this year. That's a huge number. I'm trying to just do some quick math to explain how that's the price of Eric Berry, Travis Kelce, Eric Fisher, and Marcus Peters combined. And you can do even crazier math if you want it. And this is also why drafting guys is so important. And that's one thing that Dorsey was great at. Because if you're paying Marcus Peters $2.6 million this year, as the Chiefs are, then you can afford to pay Justin Houston $22. But eventually, Marcus Peters is going to demand more money. Those are the two biggest things, in my opinion, from what I know, that brought all of this to a head. But it demands more questions, which demand more explanations. If the Chiefs were just fed up with John Dorsey's cap management and his contract management, then they wouldn't have let Chris Ballard go to Indianapolis. Everybody in the league, not just the Chiefs front office, everybody in the league knew that Chris Ballard was going to be a GM really soon. There was never a doubt about that. And it would have made a ton of sense for that to be with the Chiefs. Whenever the talk came around of John Dorsey perhaps being interested in going back to Green Bay, the thought was, well, that's fine. We have Chris Ballard. Like there wasn't widespread panic at that point. The Chiefs let Chris Ballard go to Indianapolis and ended up canning John Dorsey in late June. So what happened? What happened between Chris Ballard going to Indy and John Dorsey getting the boot in June? Something happened. Jeremy Maclin happened. And you know, we'll play the Ben Albright interview whenever we come back from the break here in a minute. I'll explain that conversation next segment, and we'll do that because he's going to tell you things that I learned from him, and I don't need to reiterate his words. He'll do it better than I can. But according to Benjamin, cutting Jeremy Maclin was the straw that broke the camel's back. And from things from speculation to things that I've heard from people who would have known, there was a lot of headbutting. There was some differing opinion on the value of John Dorsey. There was some questioning about what's Andy Reid and what's John Dorsey. What's John Dorsey being a genius? What's John Dorsey getting lucky? And Dorsey's been great in the draft. His record is fantastic. At the same time, this is my favorite bit of trivia. Who would you say is the most impressive pick from John Dorsey's time in Kansas City? Charlie, you know how the world works in some pieces, here, there. Who would you say was the most important, the most valuable draft pick in John Dorsey's history here? Because there are a couple of answers, but I think whenever I say my view on it, I think people would agree with it.
I want to say Marcus Peters, but...
See, Marcus Peters might end up being the actual best player that John Dorsey drafted.
But I almost want to say Chris Jones.
And Chris Jones is also up there, but I disagree with both of those.
Really?
The most impressive pick is Tyreek Hill.
Fair.
He's a fifth-round pick. They might have gotten DeSean Jackson in the fifth round because he punched his fiance, and we just try not to talk about that anymore. Okay, that's fine, whatever. Because Marcus Peters and Chris Jones are great players and are going to become greater players. Chris Jones was a monster last year, and he wasn't supposed to contribute last year. Marcus Peters has already become one of the best corners in football. He's still on his rookie deal. But I would argue that the most impressive pick, the most valuable pick that John Dorsey made in Kansas City was Tyreek Hill. Because it might be DeSean Jackson in the fifth round. Do you know who the Chiefs took just before Tyreek Hill? The Chiefs had two fifth-round picks, right? Do you know who that other fifth-round pick was? Because whenever the fifth round came around, the Chiefs said, "All right, here's our big board. Maybe they said, you know, there are two guys we really would love to snag in this round. This is gonna be big. But who do we want to make sure? Who is the most important of these guys on our board right now with this first pick in the fifth round? Who do we have to have? Who's the guy that we want to make sure we get?" We don't want to wait until that second, fifth-round pick. We want to take him now. That guy was Kevin Hogan. Now, Kevin Hogan did play a few games in his rookie season last year. He did it for the Browns, but he did play. Kevin Hogan in the fifth round, the quarterback, in case you forgot, didn't make the roster. Because the Chiefs went and signed Nick Foles because they couldn't trust Tyler Bray. They didn't want to have to. They didn't want to have to make Tyler Bray head back to the practice squad or to some other team for the sake of keeping Kevin Hogan around. Then they took Tyreek Hill. I'm not super convinced that Tyreek Hill draft pick is exactly as impressive as it seems. Like, the Patriots getting Tom Brady was great. They did a good job by drafting Tom Brady. Do you have consensus on that? Great. Was that brilliant? No! No, getting Tom Brady at the end of the draft was not brilliant. It turned out brilliantly. But if the Patriots would have known that Tom Brady was going to become Tom Brady, or even had an inkling, they genuinely would have just taken him in the first round. And everyone would have gone, what the hell is that? That guy's not supposed to go for five or six more rounds. He might not get drafted. You go, oh, we know something. And maybe, you know what, that's silly. Of course, you know, if they can keep their value, then they should, fine. Then you take Tom Brady in the fourth round, where people start having crapshoots. Yeah, you wait on Tom Brady and you get him at the end, and he turns out to be maybe the best quarterback of all time. You screw around long enough to take Tyreek Hill in the fifth round. You see, he's got some nice physical tools. It's worth a shot back here. Maybe he turns into the best receiver that the franchise has ever had. But it's not brilliance. It's a good result. Now, the Peters and Chris Jones things, those feel like A picks. Eric Fisher is a fine pick. I don't know how you feel about the Eric Fisher contract extension and the Alonde Rene Tardif contract and the Mitchell Schwartz. That contract seems like it's in pretty good shape, but the free agent signings haven't been mind-blowing. I mean, John Dorsey has done a very, very good job. His talent evaluation has been very, very good. I just don't think it's been flawless. I don't think it's been irreplaceable. And we also still don't know how that John Dorsey Andy Reid dynamic ever played. Whenever there needed to be a tie broken, we don't know how that came about. And I think now we might know. Like now we know that if there was a personnel dispute between Andy Reid and John Dorsey was the one who with his hand on the trigger. So this is kind of petty, but you know, maybe Reid and Dorsey are just both alpha dogs who didn't like having to submit to each other. Or Reid is an alpha dog who didn't like having to surrender completely to John Dorsey by way of personnel. Andy Reid, you know, gave John Dorsey the shopping list. Reid cooks with the groceries that John Dorsey brings him. But sometimes John Dorsey goes to the store and all of a sudden he apparently lost the bag of Jeremy Maclin in the parking lot. That's grounds for a domestic dispute, I suppose. And now Therese Paylor said he thinks it's because of money. Sam Mellinger said he suspects something similar. And if it did die on the negotiation table, I don't think it's because Clark Hunt was unwilling to put some paper on the table. I think it's because they valued John Dorsey less than John Dorsey valued himself. And we went through all the reasons that they might have thought that. And some of them I think are pretty reasonable. I think in all likelihood what happened, because I trust that Mellinger and Paylor are getting good information. They're also, you know, like close to the source, and sometimes that's great and sometimes that can make things difficult, I'm sure. Their sources are definitely within the team, you would think, right? Like, because they're here. Benjamin Albright, who you'll hear the interview later on, he's in Denver. He has, like, league sources, which is just different. You're going to hear different messages from different people. But so to take what Mellinger and Therese were saying, I think it can all be synthesized if you believe that all of those factors played in to the contract negotiations dying on that table. It can all have been a part of the reasons that John Dorsey had a value on himself that Clark Hunt and Andy Reid simply did not have. I think that can all play together. Where John Dorsey said, I want this, this, and this, and Clark Hunt says, I want you to manage the cap better. Bleep out of here. Because it wouldn't make sense that it was at least at the point of, we know it was at the point of contract negotiations because Clark Hunt said that he told Dorsey he wasn't going to be extending him beyond this season, and they decided to split there. Also, even if he hadn't said that, you'd be able to figure it out because Andy Reid gets an extension, then John Dorsey gets canned. I don't think there's a clause in John Dorsey's in Andy Reid's contract that says, I will not work with John Dorsey this year. I think all this came to fruition in the negotiations. And ultimately, John Dorsey's flaws caught up to him. Maybe Andy Reid's desire to be the top dog caught up to him. Whoever they bring in, they're all going to be reporting to Clark Hunt still. The president and the GM and the head coach all report directly to Clark Hunt in this current system. That's fine. That's not going to change according to, I think Saran had that first. But a lot of reports now have said that, you know, that's not going to change, which is good. It shouldn't change. But now, whoever comes in the GM spot is going to be Andy Reid's inferior. If there's a dispute between Andy Reid and the next GM, Andy Reid wins. If Brett Veach comes in and says, hey guys, we need to cut Jeremy Maclin. We got to do it. And Andy Reid goes, no, we don't. Do something else. Cut Dustin Colquitt and Tyler Bray instead. That'll fly. That wouldn't have fly with John Dorsey. And again, Benjamin Albright said that Andy Reid forced John Dorsey out. I asked him on Friday to explain that a little bit better. We'll have that interview coming up for you next here on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
People are about to destroy you on Twitter.
I know, I'm ready for it. Oh, but if you want to destroy me on Twitter, it's at JB Briscoe.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Follow me, then destroy me.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That makes me laugh every time. It's good that I think I'm funny, because I don't know if anybody else does. But at least I can always laugh at my own jokes. This is Sports Sunday. My name is Joshua Briscoe. In case you didn't catch it, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and destroy me there. Our next guest you can follow on Twitter at AlbrightNFL. He's a co-host on AM 1340 and 104 FM in Denver. His name is Benjamin Albright. I talked to him Friday night whenever I was hosting Sports Night because he was the first person to report that John Dorsey was forced out by Andy Reid, that it was essentially an Andy Reid power move. And there have been reports to the contrary, not really taking aim at that one in particular, but there have been reports that indicated otherwise, and I wanted to understand where Benjamin was coming from and figure out what he had heard. I have no reason to doubt his information. And you'll hear here in a little bit, I asked him about, you know, how there had been some reports saying it was something else, and he does not back down. This whole interview I found extremely interesting, and it started off whenever I asked him what he knew about the John Dorsey firing in general, how it came about, and what the major factors were in the Chiefs' decision-making process.
Well, this was not something that John Dorsey had expected. It was certainly not mutual, as the statement came out would lead you to believe. John Dorsey had been butting heads with both Andy Reid and Clark Hunt for a while now. So it was a situation that, finally came to a head with the Jeremy Maclin situation. I know I've seen several other people saying they know what happened and theories floating around out of Kansas City, and I can tell you that's not correct. What happened was is Clark Hunt had voiced his displeasure several times with Dorsey over contracts not getting done or getting done. John Dorsey's lowball tactics with people like, for specifically, Eric Berry and Justin Houston. Clark Hunt personally intervened on Eric Berry to get that contract done. Hmm. Andy Reid was upset that certain players were let go that he felt were vital to the team, and their contracts weren't renegotiated. Instead, they were cut. Guys like Maclin, for instance, that he was very close with. Clark Hunt and Andy Reid had met about the extension of his contract. Reid let his displeasure be known. Hunt let his displeasure be known, and they decided to move on. And they're probably going to be hiring Brett Veach here shortly to take his place.
One thing that we never really got a full understanding of here in Kansas City with the power structure here is, what happens whenever there is a dispute between John Dorsey and Andy Reid. From everything that you know, it sounds like John Dorsey ultimately was the guy who had to pull the trigger on a contract offer or a guy getting cut. I know Andy Reid was playing a little bit hands-off with personnel. Is that how you understand it?
The best way to explain it is that Andy Reid was the chef. He was baking the cake. Mm-hmm. John Dorsey was the guy shopping for the groceries.
Right.
So Andy Reid would tell John Dorsey what he wanted, and Dorsey would supposedly, ostensibly go get that. Now, the problem is that sometimes Dorsey would decide that a grocery had been around long enough and get rid of it. A guy like Sean Smith letting him go, or Jeremy Maclin not getting the Berry contract done in time, choosing to pay Alex Smith first and not pay Justin Houston, which ultimately cost the Chiefs more money on both players than it should have. So there were several instances of situations there that Dorsey appeared in over his head. He wasn't really strong on the player evaluation side. He was more a contracts guy. And so he got a lot of credit for finding players that maybe he didn't deserve, and people within the organization had a little resentment for that.
Now, Brett Veach, people who don't know, he's the co-director of player personnel here in Kansas City right now. You said you think he'll be the one that ends up getting the GM job that Dorsey has left vacant.
He is far and away in the lead right now, yes.
And, you know, there's been some talk about potentially bringing in an outside guy. But if it is, in fact, Veach, the reports have already been that, both the GM and Reed will both report directly to Clark Hunt. My guess is that that's all going to be at least a little bit more off balance now, where Andy Reid is clearly the guy who has more respect, more clout, more power. Can you see that going in any direction other than that, where where Reid does end up being the guy who can really swing it around in the front office?
Well, Reid was already doing that anyway. I mean, you know, that's the thing I think a lot of people don't realize. It's not necessarily a power grab by Reid so much as it is Reid making sure he gets the aforementioned groceries the way he wants them when he goes to bake the cake. So I think that having a guy like Veach, who was a lieutenant of his back in Philadelphia, in place, makes sure that he gets what he wants. Reid has no desire to deal with contracts and negotiations and things like that. So he really doesn't want that GM title because he doesn't want those responsibilities. He just wants to tell you, hey, I need this corner that can play on an island. And I can play press man if I need him, and to have Veach or whoever it may be, although at this point it'll probably be Veach, go out and get that guy.
Sam Mellinger here, the Star, said he believed that Andy Reid was not forced out, and then both Mellinger and Terez Paylor have said that they suspect that it was actually, at least in large part, about contract extension talks with John Dorsey. Mellinger said it could have been about money, years, and opt-out to head to Green Bay as speculation. Have you heard anything about the contract negotiation side of things with Dorsey and the organization? Was that even seriously on the table?
It was not about that. They had already started negotiating with John Dorsey several months back, and had been negotiating up until the Macklin situation, and then he took his vacation. They had been negotiating on that for a while. That is not the case. I've seen several false stories floating around that it was about John Dorsey's contract or leaving for Green Bay. John Dorsey's not going to get the Green Bay job anyway. It's probably going to be Ball over there. Ball, Budakist, and Wolf are the three front runners. It's probably going to be Ball who gets the job.
Jason Cole reported that Dorsey said that he and Clark Hunt had been butting heads lately, even for the last couple of months. You said it was based on that Eric Berry contract. Does it go back to Berry and Houston? Is there anything before that, or are those the first sort of shots across the bow that show that there might have been a little bit trouble kind of in the background in Kansas City? Do you know anything prior to either of those contracts?
Well, Clark Hunt was a little upset that the way the Alex Smith, Justin Houston stuff played out, you know, in the order that it did, it cost him more money on both players because Dorsey waited until both had great seasons before re-upping them instead of doing it beforehand. Mm-hmm. The Eric Berry situation, the longer it lingered, Hunt was very upset because he wanted to, you know, Eric Berry's family, he wanted him to retire as a chief, wanted to get that deal done and get him in there, and Dorsey kept lowballing him. And then the Macklin situation is what broke the camel's back, situation, which they wanted a renegotiation with Jeremy Macklin, which he was amenable to, and ultimately they just cut him and let him go right after, via voicemail, right after they'd, you know, Andy Reid had been at his wedding.
One other factor of this, something that I've been kind of clawing at for the last couple of months, is according to SpotTrack, next year the Chiefs are about $13 million over the cap for the 2018 season. And to make up for that space, they're going to be cutting Jeremy Mack, or they cut Jeremy Mack, and they will be cutting Alex Smith, they will be cutting Tom Bahali, and paying those three guys $10 million to not play for the next year. Something like a month ago, the Chiefs cut their cap specialist. Was that something else that put a larger strain on that whole relationship? Is there anything in that realm that we largely don't know about in Kansas City?
Well, absolutely. Anytime you're a team that's carrying $10 million in dead cap, you've done something wrong, especially over multiple players. So that has absolutely weighed on it. They knew they would be parting ways with Alex Smith. I will tell you that the Pat Mahomes thing was long planned. Mm-hmm. And I will also tell you this. I've seen some rumors floating around that Andy Reid didn't want Pat Mahomes. That is patently false. Andy Reid had been stumping for Pat Mahomes. Dorsey went out and got him. That's the truth of what happened there.
That was my next question, was to clarify what you know about Mahomes. So the one other thing that I kind of have on my mind is, I guess, again, kind of a large-scale thing, is there long-term damage to the franchise right now, from your understanding? Are there guys saddled to the Chiefs for future years that Andy Reid might not really want to be dealing with? Are there guys other than, say, Jeremy Macklin, who Andy Reid would have liked to have kept around, that John Dorsey gave the boot to, choices that would have been made differently if, say, Brett Veach were the GM, that might be damaging the Chiefs in the long term?
You know, I'm not damaging per se. I think the most damaging thing was letting Chris Ballard go before, you know, before doing all this. That's your key right there. That's your clue that that this wasn't something that was long planned per se, but that the final straw was Macklin. Otherwise, they would have kept Ballard and promoted him to general manager. He's very highly thought of by all parties in the building. As far as personnel goes, that Reed wanted, they're gone. Jay Howard was one, you know, that he really wanted to keep around. There's a couple other guys here or there. Not necessarily big name guys, but guys that he felt were significant contributors as role players, that kind of thing. And I don't think there's long-term damage per se other than losing the voice of Ballard in the war room.
Now, this is something that was bouncing around immediately after the firing also, saying, you know, why let Ballard go if this was something that was at all foreseen? If the Barry and the Houston deals were kind of the first little bit of a sign, really a pretty large sign, that there was trouble in paradise. And then again, looking forward to the cap situations being a mess in both 2017 and 2018, why were the Chiefs not more intent on keeping Chris Ballard around if they had any inclination that they were going to be eventually letting John Dorsey go?
Well, they didn't. That's the thing. And that's why I'm saying these reports are that, you know, this had been long planned or false. While there were things that had butted heads previously, they thought they had everything under control, and then the Macklin situation happened. And that's really what precipitated it. So you'll hear stories out of the front office that'll have, you know, this all being on Clark Hunt and things like that. That's just to protect the goodwill for Andy Reid. I've laid it out what happened, and those calls came from direct sources. So I would say that, you know, anybody telling you that they knew this was coming for a long time is lying to you.
Just last bit of clarification here, Ben, and again, I appreciate your time.
No,
it was a ramp up for Eric Berry, a ramp up with the Justin Houston deal, and you can, you know, throw in Jay Howard over, but Chris Ballard was hired by the Colts at the end of January. And you're saying you're saying clearly here, the release of Jeremy Macklin, the point of contention on what to do about Jeremy Macklin, that was the breaking point for the Chiefs letting John Dorsey go.
That was the straw that broke the camel's back, yes.
I think that's a pretty good summary there at the end. That was Benjamin Albright. He's at Albright NFL. He joined me Friday night, and I feel like I learned a lot by listening to him there. A couple of main things. Straw broke the camel's back, being Jeremy Macklin, the disagreement between John Dorsey and Andy Reid. Also something that I wish I would have followed up on Friday night. Jeremy Macklin was open to contract renegotiation discussions, according to Benjamin. From everything we know, that he was never even approached. I think even Mike Florio for Pro Football Talk asked him if the contract renegotiation discussions were ever had. I'm pretty sure Macklin said they weren't. So not even try? It's really interesting. And also, it seems like Benjamin is not super down with my theory that the discussions got as far as the contract, the sort of everything fell apart on the contract negotiation table, because he said they were negotiating, and then Dorsey went on vacation, and then all of this fell apart. 913-3810-810. I'm curious what you think about what you might have learned from that interview, what you're thinking about John Dorsey's release in general, and the state of the Kansas City Chiefs right now. Also, Lewis Riddick has tweeted that he's not interviewing with the Chiefs, and there's not an interview scheduled. That's according to Lewis Riddick, the guy who would be getting interviewed. So, I don't know what's going on.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
In case you missed it, Lewis Riddick is interviewing with the Chiefs for the GM job, except for Lewis Riddick says he's not, so I guess he's not. The Benjamin Albright interview was super interesting. I learned a lot of things. I think the two big takeaways that I got listening to it a second time, being in it once and then listening to it this time, the Jeremy Macklin thing was a bigger deal than we realized. And we thought it would be a pretty big deal even here. I mean, even at the time, it seemed like kind of a strange move for Andy Reid in regard to Jeremy Macklin, because also, I just realized, by the way, I'm just gonna derail myself real fast. You have to feel so stupid if you're one of the people that just like, well, he just didn't like fit in the offense. Like, he didn't like the Chiefs didn't need a number one wide receiver. Andy Reid didn't want him, didn't need him. He realized it was an unnecessary move to have Jeremy Macklin on this roster. That was always dumb. I devoted hours of this particular radio show to explaining that that's dumb. And now even Andy Reid has essentially confirmed to you that it was simply a cap space thing. And one that he wouldn't have made if he was in charge. That's the information we have now. That just crossed my mind of just how foolish so many of those Jeremy Maclin discussions were. Talking about how the offense just didn't need a number one receiver, didn't need him as a weapon, how the Chiefs shouldn't have been worrying about getting a number one receiver in there or getting him out of the way for Tyreek Hill, or please. And I think that losing Jeremy Maclin, by the way, is going to be something that we talk about for the next, like, 2 years. And then we're going to be talking about the John Dorsey thing for until the Chiefs are good. If the Chiefs struggle without John Dorsey, then we're going to look back on all of this with great shame. If the Chiefs are level from here on out, or if they take some steps forward in the next 3 years, then we're all going to feel really foolish about freaking out about losing John Dorsey. Take your calls when you come back. It's Sports Sunday.